Hey, welcome to another episode of Film Streak. My name is Rob, and if you've been listening, you know that all I do is talk about new movies that I've seen. And this episode is going to be pretty special. This is going to be a little bit of a different, lineup. We're looking at Latino films from filmmakers and producers and directors all around the country, all around the world, really. And we're doing that here at the Houston Latino Film Festival. And this is the seventh annual festival. Now, this started in 2015. And because of COVID, there was a year where it was shut down, just like everything else in the world. But the idea now is we're back, and it's bigger than ever. We've got a big lineup, lots of films, more days, more screenings. And with me today, I have a special guest. A guest and a friend. His name is Jesus Blickweed, and he is a part of the festival here. And tell us a little bit about what you do here.
So thanks, Rob. Jesus Blickweed, and I am part of the programming crew here. Starting in about October, we preview over 500 films in preparation for this festival. We rate them anywhere from writing, directing, pacing, performances, sound, and we get through all of them. And because we really care about filmmakers, we have obviously the co-director, Pedro Rivas, is actually part of the programming crew. And we really understand what it goes into making films. And we take that part of it very seriously. So during the festival this week, I'm a moderator. So I've been introducing films along with some other moderators. And we introduce the films. We hold Q&As if the film director or part of the cast is with the film, or if they're on location or on site, we will have a Q&A with them and talk to them about their film.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, we've both been here at the festival since the beginning, really, since the first year. Yep. And it's been interesting to watch it grow and become a little more of a presence, at least in the local community, certainly in the overall film festival circuit. I'm just very proud to kind of know everybody that's involved with the festival, including you. And
thanks.
Just seeing it all really become a big cohesive vision. From the guys, and I got to shout them out. And there they are over there. There's David Cortez, Dave Sobrero, and Pedro Rivas. They are the guys that I met a long time ago, and they kind of told me about the vision for this festival, and I'm just happy to see it's still going and it's growing. They're putting in a lot of hard work. There's all these 5 days this year, all the screenings, all of the volunteers that are here. It's a pretty big effort, and I think it's all with the idea that they're pushing these films and presenting these stories, these filmmakers, yeah, to a community here in Houston, at least, that maybe won't get to see these films anywhere else. And that's kind of the goal here, is I want to be able to talk about these films and give them a little bit more of a platform, because you may or may not see these in wider release someday. So with that in mind, Jesus, I want to talk to you a little bit.
Sure.
Let's set a little groundwork here, right? Mm-hmm. So for you specifically, can you give me an idea, like what is an early film memory or your first film experience?
So you're basically trying to, you're dating me now, because it was 1983, uh-huh. E.T. came out. You might want to check it. I guess I was old enough to realize, I think, what I was seeing, where I was going, right? Sometimes you bring kids are in movie theaters, and I'm like, why? They won't even remember this. But we might, you know. And I think I was about 4 or 5 years old, right, and I remember going to see E.T. I think it was highly, it was a big blockbuster film, obviously, and it was highly marketed. My parents were like, hey, let's go. And I was completely enthralled. Mm-hmm. And you put yourself on that bicycle, you know, with the hoodie, mm-hmm, with your friends, you know, the sister you want to hit over the head, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, the whole thing was, you felt like I was in that movie. I was that kid, and right, that E.T. was my friend. And, I've seen it over and over again, and it just gives me, you notice things, right? After, right, you notice different things, but I still remember, yeah, how I felt that first time I saw E.T.
That's good. That's good to know. Yeah. I mean, I think for a lot of us, that was a big film in our life.
So. You remember, there was a single mom. I had a single mom.
Yep.
And the kids ran everything, right? And I just remember having your little neighborhood gang, you know what I mean? And your cousins, your brothers, your sisters, whatever. And that's how it felt. That was your world. And so it was great.
In that regard, I think we're actually pretty similar. So how about this? Give me an idea of maybe if you had to put together a top five films, just give me one of those. Doesn't have to be the top, but something that's really high up on your personal list.
All right. So don't laugh.
Okay.
Okay. Steve Martin's The Jerk. I like comedies, right?
Okay.
So that would probably be up there because it is strictly a comedy, right? Mm-hmm. But then close to that is probably like Forrest Gump, because it was also very funny,
right?
But it was also very dramatic as mm-hmm. well. I'm a movie girl like everybody else. Yeah, I've indie films are very, very cool to watch, and some non-narratives and movies that just don't have a protagonist per se or anti-heroes. But I like movies that have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I like kind of not having to, just like most people, the commercial movie goer, like feeling that. So Forrest Gump, I felt, was a very complete movie. Mm-hmm. It sent you through the whole range of emotions.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Number three has to be, let's see. God, you put me on the spot.
That's great. Yeah. Already those are good. I think they're always good to know, like, people's sensibilities. I mean, everybody has the obscure, weird stuff that they like, but I think most people, they kind of drift towards the bigger, more higher profile and maybe more universal stories and themes.
You know, going back to some of that now, I saw Star Wars came out. Now I'm even dating myself. I think 1978 Star yeah. Wars, but I didn't see it then. But I think I saw Empire Strikes Back first, mm-hmm. and then I went and saw all of them together, and that kind of shaped me, and all of us, it shaped my movie going experience for a long time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until much later I started getting into some of these, like what was that? Spotless Mind.
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine. Yeah, that was. I remember one. Yeah. That was one of the first movies. I was like, okay, let's think out of the box.
Film can do this.
Let me drift
right.
more. You know what I mean? Or let me use more of my brain to mm-hmm. involve myself in these films.
Yeah.
And so there it goes. We're I'm starting to grow up. I'm starting to expect more out of films.
Right.
And when you see a film that kind of like makes you go there, you want to see it again.
Yeah.
Train Spotting. That was
sure.
one where I'm like, whoa, what?
That What's was one that on? Personally it just kind of was traumatizing.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? A film that makes you kind of queasy and like why does it make you queasy?
Right.
Why does it make you move? Why are you leaving the film and you actually cared about a character enough to hate him? Or, mm-hmm. I remember Gladiator.
Okay.
I wanted at the end of Gladiator, I hope it's not, no spoiler alert here. I wanted him to come back and rule, right? Even though that's not part of the history, right?
Right.
And then when he got caught, I was so disappointed. I was like, what was Ridley Scott doing? This is an awful ending. And I remember not liking Gladiator at first because I was like, oh, that ending. Like he should have come back and rule. And that's what Marcus Aurelius really would have wanted is for him to, the general, to come back and the Spaniard, to rule Rome and it didn't. And I remember being like, oh no. And then he died. But then I saw Gladiator again and again and again, and the music and the performances, and it happened. Now it just gets more perfect as you watch it, So
there's layers to it.
I like revisiting movies that at first maybe nah, but then you think I want to always ask myself why.
Yeah.
Why did I not like it?
Exactly. And that's a big, that's a big point of doing this, is sometimes it's a first watch and it's kind of an instant reaction. Other times it's where some of the films we've talked about in previous episodes, I sit with it a little bit and I really try to give it some thought and break it down in a way that maybe digs deeper into the themes and the story of it.
Totally.
So, here's one other thing I wanted to ask, just real quickly. Anything recently that you've seen that is maybe impressed you or kind of made a mark? I mean, aside from anything here at the festival, right?
Yeah.
I know you've seen a lot as part of selecting films, but anything maybe out in cinemas or streaming or whatever?
It's true. So, for the last few months, I have watched nothing but these film festival movies.
Okay.
and it was because there were we had to go through so many that I kind of shelved a lot of other stuff.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I can see that. You don't want to necessarily taint the water with stuff that's out in release versus the things that you're really purposefully watching for selection. So I get that. Okay, so I'll tell you what, let's pick up with FilmStreak where we left off. We were at 219. I've watched 219 films in a row.
Wow.
Not necessarily every day. That's a little bit hard to do. But here we go. FilmStreak 220, Carajita.
El azar es caprichoso, me dijiste una vez. Como si solo nos uniera el accidente de que aparecieras por mi casa cuando acababa de nacer.
Falta contarme unas cuantas cositas, ¿sí?
Porque ya nunca más, ni una sola vez, me volviste a sacar el ojo.
Tiene que pasar un buen rato.
Dime que no puede ser solo eso, el azar.
Muchacha, hay gente.
¿Quién es esa? ¿Tu hija?
¿Y qué hace mi mamá contigo? O sea, te limpia, te cocina, te arregla tu habitación.
No, ya hace mucho que ella no me limpia mi habitación.
Chicote. Pero ella me habla mucho de Tito.
¿Quiere venir? A la fiesta.
Así mismo te vas más, Yuri, el día de la fiesta. A la que más bailaba, a la que más chelchaba.
Pero no quiero que piense que nosotros somos asquerosos. Nosotros no somos así.
Vamos.
¿Qué progresistas son en esa casa?
¡Yari!
Por lo menos respeto a ella, que dedicó su vida a atender a ustedes, coño, a limpiar su culo.
Yo lo tengo que decir a Yarisa.
¿Tú quieres cavar tu propia tumba o algo así?
¡Voy! ¿Dónde?
Oye, mira, guarda eso, que eso es prueba y evidente.
Te estoy llamando para saber cómo amaneció la muchacha. ¿Cómo que qué muchacha? Mayuri.
Quiero que sepas que cuando esto acabe, podrás volver a casa y te estaremos esperando.
Okay, so this is a film that is, this was actually the opening night film for the festival here.
Yep.
And I tell you what, since you were part of the selection process here and looking at these films, maybe how about your thoughts on it to start with?
Sure. In Latino America, if you are, you know, part of a certain class in Hispano America, Latino America, and you're part of the haves and not the have-nots, you probably have servants or like a maid, and you really have to have known someone who or been there to understand the bond you get with the people who help raise your children. Your nanny is not just your nanny, but she is like a pseudo mom.
Right.
And so the protagonist, I would say is a dual protagonist in this film is Sarah, the young girl who's Carajita, which translates into, you know, young girl or just a certain amount of innocence to it. There could be a little derogatory thing by calling someone a Carajita, like, oh, you're too young or whatever.
Right.
And then the maid, or the servant of the family, Magnolia, who's here at the festival a couple of days ago when it premiered. And you have to know that bond to understand because her daughter, the maid's daughter, actually comes to visit her. I won't give too much away for those who haven't seen it. No spoiler alerts. My impression, one of the scenes where the two girls are talking and they're like, so how's my mom doing? Like, you know, and it's like, why are you, you know, I'm like, that's your mom. And then the other girl's like, senses that uncomfortable. Your mom talks about you. Your mom actually talks about you. She says great things about you. And I'm like, this is the most awkward conversation in the world. Like, how's my mom doing? You know?
Yeah.
But it's real. And because the daughter doesn't live with her mom, the servants The servant lives with the daughter, which right. is, you know, her,
like a live-in house,
a live-in housemaid. So yeah. like that dynamic, if you don't know much about it, it's the closeness that comes from it, that relationship actually is challenged.
Right. Big ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you do have a mom and dad and, mm-hmm. To the maid, she does have a daughter who she has to care about now, and it sort of throws it on its head.
Right.
Like, what do you do then when sort of those relationships and that classism begins now? Yeah.
I think that was a big factor to the story that maybe I didn't really expect. I kind of assumed this was about a relationship between two characters. One is kind of a pseudo mother to the young girl. And the fact that it really highlights or shines a light on this separation of classes and even cultures, when we see Sara with her family and they live in this fairly nice, I don't want to say a home because it's even bigger than that. It's not even clear like what her father, what her family is like, what their business is, but it seems a little bit sketchy maybe. It's implied that he's very powerful and he can make things happen. And we kind of see that in the film later. But when we see the disparity between that environment and then Yarisa, the nanny, and her family, where they live in their, I guess, town or part of town, You really get a sense that that kind of disparity, that kind of inequality, that's something that I don't feel like we see a lot in stories like this, especially when it comes to Latino culture. I mean,
right.
Sometimes the idea is like, well, you have different ethnicities and Latinos are maybe the ones that are, living through hardship. But here it's like within the Latino culture, there are different ways of life.
And you're right. And here in America, you see that through maybe the super rich, maybe they've replicated that
right.
from, but it's similar to that feeling in Latino America where where your children grow up with your nanny and
right.
then they become,
right.
This woman who's cooked for you probably for like 15, 16 years, mm-hmm. your both parents are working. That is a story here in America. And I want to kind of go back because I was like, oh, you don't see it here. But you do in certain families where the help or your servants are really more than just your servants.
Right.
They're part of the family
exactly.
until they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Until there's a calamity or something where you're forced to analyze that relationship, like who's actually more important to me, my daughter or my maid who's raised my daughter or her family? How much do I care about now?
Yeah.
I put myself in the position of the dad of Sarah's dad, who's the powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell, like you said, he's a powerful guy. I almost thought this was like a vacation home that they,
True.
I was thinking, but it's not. It's like a compound, right?
Right.
And I'm sure this guy has like another home somewhere, mm-hmm. maybe in Switzerland or something. And this is where they are most of the time. Maybe where Yarisa,
yeah.
character lives, probably maybe taking care of the house while they're gone and so on. So,
I think it's even interesting that the way that the story plays out. So I'll just say this much. There is an incident or I guess an accident that happens in the film that really turns the whole story, right? It changes the whole course of what these characters are about to experience. And before that happens, you see a little bit of that dynamic where Sara and her friends and they're at a party and you get a sense like Mallory, who is Yarisa's daughter, doesn't really fit in. And you could even say it's something as superficial as, their darker skin, that can even be a thing. Colorism is sometimes a thing where it's like, well, you're not one of us, even though we're all from the same place. So seeing that play out in little, almost like microaggressions, it's only amplified after this incident happens where, Yarisa's family, when they're trying to understand what happened and trying to cope with the fallout of that, the outcome, where they start to really highlight, the story starts to highlight, oh, you don't really care about people like us. Right. Or, you know, you don't understand people like us. And that's where I think the dramatic impact really comes, is you feel these characters, they're at an impasse almost.
Right.
You know?
Right. Before the incident happened, yeah. which is called the incident.
Yeah.
Yarissa tells her daughter, don't go out with her.
Right.
Don't. And I think it's like kind of like a warning, yeah. like an octoon, you know, watch out. Like, you don't want, please don't go out with them.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a loser, it's going to be you, baby. Right. You know, right. it's and I, the daughter was like, whatever, I can handle myself. Yeah. You know, and maybe Yarissa's the nanny, she knew.
Yeah,
she knew that this yeah. isn't a, this isn't a place for you. It's barely a place for me. But like, right. listen, I'm here. You know what I mean? They're not going to treat you. They're not going to treat you fairly, perhaps. And what happens is, maybe not. You
yeah.
know, maybe she wasn't.
That's a big thing I got a sense of. And it's kind of disturbing to watch it play out because that sort of like apathy and just detachment from, it's almost like these aren't people. That's kind of the point of view of Sadr's family and the people around them versus Yarissa and the culture that she comes from. It's like, well, you don't necessarily really count. You're almost disposable.
Yeah, it's sad.
And yeah, there is a moment where that's put on the line of like, this could happen. Like, this could go badly. And so, you know, with that in mind, I think the other aspect of the story that I really connected with, it is a look at guilt and grief, especially towards the end of the film, where Yarissa really is struggling and suffering with some of the fallout of this, you know, incident that happens in the film. And it's important to know that, or I think for me, it's important to know that that hits everybody in the same way, you know, and even Sarah, who at the end of the film is struggling with it in her own way and sure. in a way kind of withdrawing, right? And almost not wanting to acknowledge things that have happened, maybe even not acknowledge her family and her way of life. I guess there's different ways you could read it.
Sure.
But my way of reading it is like, she's not proud of her involvement right. in any of this
either. In that scene with her boyfriend,
yeah.
where her boyfriend wants to work for her dad. And she's yeah. like, you want to work for a corrupto?
Yeah.
You want to work for a corrupt guy? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, she knows.
Yeah.
She knows, you know, that what dad does, perhaps. Yeah. She knows. I mean, we don't think kids see, but they see you. They're you have children and I don't, but what I do know, having been a child, is you become very good at observing.
Oh yeah. So with that said, this film, Carajita, I think it's a great film to watch and see it wherever you can. You know, whether this ends up being having a theatrical release or maybe you catch it on streaming somewhere. You know, these kinds of films, that's the importance of going to a festival like this, is you can see these at places that you may never see them. So even if you have a local film festival or a major city near you, go check it out.
Right.
So let's keep this moving. Let's move on to our next film.
Yep.
Okay, so here we are. This is Film Streak 221. This is The Beast.
¿Qué? Estuve viajando por muchos sitios, haciendo el tonto. Una noche iba tan borracho que tuve que parar. Me tumbé y vi el cielo lleno de estrellas. Cuando me desperté, estaba aquí, en este valle. Y me pasé toda mi vida pensando en esto y me decía, cuando sea un viejo, estaré aquí. Seré libre.
Y serías libre justo aquí, ¿no? Es una historia preciosa.
¿Tú crees que este sitio para mí es un capricho? No, Sean. Este sitio para mí es todo. Es mi proyecto de vida.
No, yo no.
Mío y de mi mujer.
Yo no pienso eso.
¿Qué piensas?
Ojalá te hubieras despertado en otra aldea.
And I'll just start off by saying this is a pretty intense film, wouldn't you say?
It's very, very intense. For some of us, it comes close to home, you know.
You want to give us a little bit of the premise and sure. The idea?
Sure. It's about a couple who moves into the Spanish countryside and runs into conflicts with their neighbor.
Right.
And it addresses issues of xenophobia, perhaps, and fear of the unknown. And even though you're in the same boat with someone, you would say, you know, that your neighbor is living the same life you are, trying to raise, let's say in this instance, you're farmers and you're trying to raise crops or do. Well, windmill farm comes in, right? And our windmill company comes in and wants to buy up a large swath of this land. It creates kind of controversy and conflict with neighbors, and right. It pits neighbor against neighbor, and it doesn't end too well for one of the neighbors. but it is a film that shows the resilience too of the human spirit, which I really liked.
The thing that was interesting is kind of new for me is that it shines a light on a cultural difference I hadn't really considered before, and that is the difference between these two neighbors of France and Spain. And sure, there's going to be some overlap and maybe some conflict, but here I guess it's highlighting it in a way that, like I said, I just never thought of. You know, that we have our main character here, played by Denis Menochet, who he's a former professor, if I remember right. Yeah. It's him and his wife. They move into this Spanish town in the countryside, and they're immediately outsiders, but he's also more educated, more cultured, maybe more resourceful than they might be. You know, they're maybe simpler, more hardy townsfolk who they just want to get some money. They want to be able to maybe elevate themselves a little bit by selling out to this company with these windmills, and he's the one that's there on purpose. So he has a very solid interest in not selling out and living this way of life that he chose to live. And so that's where the conflict really comes to a head, is these two, you know, our characters and the townsfolk, their two ways of thinking of this, they're never going to seem to agree.
Right.
And, you know, there's a great scene probably about halfway through where after the men of the village, of the town, really tormenting and harassing and threatening Antoine, is our main character, and his wife, Olga. After a series of events like this, he takes it upon himself, instead of like pushing back with violence or pushing back in other kinds of harmful ways, to just sit down and try and talk it out. And,
right.
You know, I we talked about this before, but it's a thing where to watch it play out in real time, it's like, I think it's one long uncut take, but to see where this feels like it's already tense, this conversation is about to happen. And somehow these guys seem to get closer to middle ground.
He invites them to a drink. He says, you know, hey, I'll buy, you know.
Yeah.
And that's usually a detente, right? Like, let's just chill here. Like, let's talk.
And you see that they're trying to use reason. They're trying to really find some midway point to agree on something. And slowly you just see it all devolve and it turns into a shouting match. And not only do they go back to their corners, but now they've both got like heavy beef with each other.
Right.
Now,
they've gone more into their, like you said, they're
entrenched.
Retreated back into their way. Like this, you know, actually, and not just that, but there is no other way other than what eventually happens.
So, you know, I think just the way that kind of stuff plays out in this film, you know, it makes you think that this is going to be a certain kind of story. It's going to be a story that, for me, the immediate thing that comes to mind is something like Straw Dogs, where you know, this couple, they go into this small town. In that case, it was a small British town, like in the countryside. And they get tormented, they get harassed, they get physically threatened and all kinds of stuff. And it gets really disturbing in that film. This one is different in the sense that it's more grounded and it feels more organic, the way things develop and the way these characters conduct themselves. They stay true to the characters that we introduced at the beginning. Right, they don't become superheroes. They don't become supervillains. You know,
right.
They're just regular people who have their own point of view,
right.
And they're never going to agree on this.
Exactly.
And then about halfway through the film, everything takes a turn, and it does become a story about. In my mind, it's more a story about devotion and dedication and that perseverance.
Yep.
To stick to your guns and the mission that you're on, the thing you believe in. To stay true to that, and we really see that play out with Olga, with his wife.
Right.
Without giving too much away, Olga really takes command of the situation. And I, you have any thoughts
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, and her daughter. She, I mean, it makes you think when Olga finally kind of steps up and she becomes sort of our new protagonist in a way. You're thinking, was she the protagonist all along? I mean,
yeah.
Was her and Antoine, their union, where did they get the strength? And,
right.
And then you start seeing, okay, it didn't go away. It actually persists with her. And she's going to stick to her guns, as it were, and see this thing through. When you said that everyone's sticking to their guns, I was thinking, you know what, back in the 1600s, 1500s, you're in a countryside, your dad grew up there, your mom grew up there, you know, you all have this land, you're not going anywhere. No one's going to kick you off the land. It's like someone trying to take your name away from you or something, you know, and
mm-hmm.
that's, and if it wasn't for a laptop here and there or,
right.
or, you know, a modern day, you know, a truck rolling around, this very well could be a story back in the Middle Ages of some sort between, mm-hmm. Dueling families and
right.
The Capulets and Montagues mm-hmm. in a way, you know, so it's a timeless story really of, mm-hmm. of kind of neighbor against neighbor.
Yeah. And I do like that on top of all that, there is a little bit of a mystery to some of the, it's strange. It does dabble in a couple of different genre tropes, let's say.
Mm.
It doesn't necessarily become a thriller, although there are some moments where you're never sure quite what's going to happen. And there are a couple of disturbing scenes in it, let's say. I mean, if you look at the poster for the film or the cover art, if you're not, without context, you're not really sure what you're looking at, but in the film, it's a pretty harrowing scene.
Yeah.
And you're not even clear what the resolution of that is until much later in the film. You know, and I think that's a really kind of zag move of like, wait, what just happened? What did we just watch? And did we jump in time? Did I miss a scene somewhere?
Right.
So the film really, it uses the cinematic language to skip over some of the stuff that you probably expect and go right into the heart of, I think, the theme that it's trying to talk about. So, you know, with that in mind, and I got to say, you know, the first thing that occurred to me watching the film, our main character here, Antoine, he's played by Denis Menochet, who I recognize from Inglourious Basterds.
That's right.
And, you know, being the farmer in the opening scene, you know, very kind of a quiet personality who is also kind of holding on to a secret that we learn about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's not quite the same character, but it's a very similar approach, I think. And maybe that's just his acting style.
I haven't seen any
other films that he's in, but
just like a stoicism,
exactly.
A groundedness, and I'm going to conserve. I'm going to conserve my emotions and my energy
yeah.
until I can't, perhaps.
Right. Right. So, and I think when that happens, when the moment comes, it's powerful, and it's even hard to watch in a way. So that was just an interesting moment to me because that's right at the beginning of the film, and I realized, okay, here's a face, here's a personality I kind of recognize. So that's a good thing to hang on to kind of get you through when you're not sure what is coming next.
Yeah.
So and with that in mind, you know, that speaks to maybe this film has gotten some other acclaim even before arriving here at the festival. You have some.
Yeah, I look. It premiered at last year at Cannes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was premiered at the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
it won a Goya Award for Best Director and Best Feature.
Okay, yeah. So it's already gotten some notice, and it's certainly it's much higher profile. And of course, some of the films here, they're just starting that journey,
right,
of getting into film festivals and getting that kind of notice. But here with this one, The Beast, certainly one to check out for sure.
Yeah, from sort of the trends right now in the streaming services, I can definitely see this one popping up there for people,
right,
to watch at some point.
Yeah. That's the thing that with a lot of streaming services, you see that, right? The foreign films and films of different types of stories, they're getting a lot more platforms to work with now to be shown on. So I would expect this, you might be able to find one day on Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever,
sure,
whatever's out there. So, any other thoughts on The Beast?
The strong female character of Olga, I did want to just say reiterate perhaps that she is like unmoving and mm-hmm. that, and I really liked, you made me think about, all of a sudden things are popping up in my brain, images are popping up that when you said a thriller, it becomes like sort of a thriller at the end because you're like, we all know what happened as the audience, but.
And even we're not entirely clear. Right? Right. We do kind of jump through time as the film goes on. And it's not like we get any kind of marker like a week later or a year later or anything. It just kind of happens.
But they can't farm anymore.
Right.
They poisoned their crops. And so they go, I think what happens is they go to sheep. They have to buy, or they have to change gears.
Yeah.
And I really like that. That we're sticking here, like
that's right.
Olga's character is a strong female character, and I was happy to see that.
Yeah, and it is one that is revealed over the course of the film. Like at the early scenes, she's almost kind of there in the background, mm-hmm. like it's really Antoine and his wife,
right?
And then it really becomes Olga,
yeah,
and her husband Antoine. You know,
exactly. Good point.
So with that in mind, this is definitely a recommendation. You know, check this one out wherever you can. And that's that for The Beast.
The Beast. Bestia.
All right. So, look, this has been a fun episode to do. We're here at the 7th annual Houston Latino Film Festival. And I tell you what, Jesus, it's been great talking to you here.
Great talking to you, too.
We're going to do some more. We're going to talk about some more films
for
the next episode, if you're down for that.
Let's do it.
But in the meantime, like if you want to find out more about the festival here in Houston, you can go to HoustonLatinoFilmFestival.org.
That's right.
You can find out, you know, the festival will have passed probably by the time this is out, but there's always another one. Yep. And there are other events, screenings, different collaborative art and music film experiences here in Houston. So you can always go to the website, sign up to get email updates. And
there's Dia de los Muertos. It won't be for a few more months,
sure,
right? But we do have a collaboration with the Houston Arts Cinema Arts Society,
okay,
where we help put that on. So there's not just the Houston, it's growing.
Right.
We're kind of our reach and our participation with other groups in film festivals.
And I think that's important thing to recognize is this festival, you know, the guys here, David and Pedro, they started with this vision to bring these kinds of stories, these kinds of films to this city, to this community. And I think they've done a great job being a part of it, or at least watching it grow over the last 8 years. It's been great. And I'm proud to know these guys and know you and everything you're all doing here. So be sure to check out the festival. If anything, I mean, if you want to see some films like these that you can't see anywhere else, this is the place. Especially if you're in the Houston or even just in Texas,
because
there are not many festivals like this,
right,
specifically for Latino filmmakers and Latino stories. So this is definitely a place to check out. So in the meantime, look, Jesus, I don't know about you. I'm sure you're going to go watch something new at the festival here.
Sure. Yep.
And I'll do the same. So, like, if you want to hear more episodes, if you want to check out the next episode, we'll talk about some more. Go to filmstreak.com and you can subscribe, use a podcast catcher service, whatever they call them these days.
Yep.
You can also sign up to get them by email, get a new episode every week. And
right to your inbox.
Exactly.
Right to your inbox.
Make it easy,
yeah,
right?
Why not? Just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Don't make it hard. Make it easy. So we're going to go watch some new movies. And Jesus, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob.
All right. Talk to you later.